And we welcome everybody into the Branson Podcast Network. It is where the Ozarks region comes to talk. And of course, this is another edition of the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. This series in its entirety and through these episodes is powered and presented by Arvest Bank. We've got a new look for this episode. Of course, I am one of two hosts. My name is Josh Grisham. Joining me and replacing the amazing Pam Yancey is the equally amazing Melissa Box. Melissa, welcome in to your debut episode here on the Heart of the Emergency Worker. It's so great to have you joining me.
Yes, I'm very excited. I do feel like I have big shoes to fill, but, you know, she was a great mentor to me, and so I'm going to do the best I can, and I'm super excited to be here today.
Well, young lady, I will say this. Pam went out, she got the very best, and she speaks very, very highly of you, even to this day. She knew right where to go, and she knew where to leave this podcast with, and in your hands, very, very capable. Well, first things first, the fact that it is your debut episode, you know that the focus of this podcast series is to uncover and share the stories of our regional heroes. And we have gotten some great submissions that come through the Branson Podcast Network website. As a matter of fact, you go to Arvest Bank Cares, you can nominate a hero at any one of the branches, or you can go on the network website. And that's really the focus of this show and focus of this series. Some of the episodes that you may have heard, I would just love to just get your thoughts real quick before we go into our special guests in this segment. What do you think about the series so far, and what's really stuck with you as far as the mission statement?
Really, I think from listening to the past podcast, I think that it really debuts a lot of the people that are heroes and we don't even know about them at times. So it really is tears on my heartstrings to get to actually know these people that live in this life every day.
And, you know, the best part about it is it really does pull at the emotions. I love the fact that you said that, because the stories are emotional. They are inspirational and powerful, because, folks, we've got heroes all around us. That's why we go on the hunt for these stories. We welcome people to be nominated because we want to share this. It brings more of a community connection. It breeds more respect, more patience. And a young man who I have known for many, many years and I have shared time with here at this radio station, which really it's kind of like old home week. It is a reunion. A young man who has given back to his community in so many ways, and he has got a very powerful and very moving story. Matter of fact, I say story, it's his life. His life is equally moving. I just got to welcome into the show our very special guest for this edition in this series, Darren Carter. Welcome, my friend. It is good to see you, and I'm going to get the reunion hug after this episode is over with. But welcome in. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I'm grateful. I take this opportunity very serious to get to share the story. You know, you never know this side of heaven what kind of impact you have, you know, with what you've experienced in your life. But always good to see you, Josh. Great to be back here in this historic place, you know. How many years has this radio station been here now in this building?
Oh, my gosh. In this particular building or just in the community, we're talking decades, decades plus. It's crazy.
It's a landmark. It really is.
Through multiple families, multiple ownerships, and people retiring and coming and going, it's been a standard.
Yeah, definitely. And great to meet you, Melissa. And like I said beforehand, I've listened to a few of the episodes, and you guys are really doing what Hollywood could never imagine to do. You were telling the stories. You're getting these guys and gals in here. And they're actually getting to hear, the public is, what it's like to be a first responder day in and day out, and not the, you know, the spin that Hollywood puts on it. So
there's no dramatization, but we are proud to glorify it, and we glorify it by getting behind the mic, having the casual conversation, and telling the stories. Well, first things first, Mr. Carter, and there's going to be lots of questions coming your way. But you know what? I want to talk about family, you growing up, and then we'll kind of go forward in time to your decision to serve and what sector of the public sector you served in. But talk to me about family life for you relative to any siblings you had, mother and father, and the influences of you that drove you to the career that you chose.
So third generation first responder. My dad was a Springfield fireman.
Wow.
And I had a great uncle that was a Springfield police officer. Way back when, I don't even know what year that was. And then when I got into the academy, I still had a cousin that was a detective. at the Springfield Police Department. So I actually didn't plan on this. I mean, it was a dream as a child. I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player.
Oh, my gosh. What team did you want to play for?
The Royals, obviously.
Okay, you know. Good choice. Good choice. Awesome. Kauffman Stadium.
They're not very
yes.
good now, but a few years ago they were there. A few years ago, you know, they won a World Series. So.
Oh, absolutely.
They just needed you all this time. You know that.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. But no, I wasn't very good at hitting. So I could catch, I could run, but hitting wasn't there. So high school is where it stayed. But a police officer was always a dream as a little boy.
Yes, yes.
But out of high school, I went to Evangel University, mm-hmm. and I studied psychology. Well, I took a sociology class that was required.
Yeah.
And the professor was Bob Certain. He spent some time as the presiding commissioner of Greene County. All his stories in his sociology class was geared towards law enforcement. He was a 10-year veteran of Springfield PD, and I was just intrigued. I changed my major to criminal justice. I dropped out of college once I got that magic 60 credit hours so that I could even apply for the academy. Because back then...
That's a lot of time to put in, though.
It is. I mean, it's 2 years of school, basically an associate's degree. And back then, that was the requirement. They have lowered those requirements because of trying to get more people interested in being a first responder. And so, but anyway, I drop out. I go to the academy. I was the youngest guy in the class. I sat right next to the oldest guy in the class. I was 20 years old.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. I was going to be my next question. How young were you when you went into the academy?
Yeah, so I was 20, and I graduated at 21, which is the age you have to be to be commissioned. And I worked there a couple years, still living down here.
Okay.
We decided to, I got tired of the drive.
Were you a local boy? Did you grow up here?
Yeah, grew up here.
Okay.
Our dads were friends, you might remember.
Native?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yes, yes. I lived over here
love
on
homegrown.
Highland Street.
I love homegrown. Yes.
Just down the road on Highland Street. I remember when Bob Evans was brand new. We'd walked to dinner. We lived there about 10 years and... Then moved to Hollister. I went to Hollister High School. So, yeah, local boy.
Hollister grad.
Yeah.
And so young, going into the academy. So when you decided to drop out, I mean, that's a big deal in its own right. I mean, because obviously, you know, your life turns on a dime, right? And you're going to hear parallels of this as we uncover more about Darren's story and his life. Going into the academy, were there any conversations that you had with mom, dad, uncle? What did they think about that? Did you have any of those conversations going in at first? And did anything stick out in your mind, even to this day now?
I did. I was also engaged at the time. So my wife, Julie, we've been married 20 years. But so I had conversations
Amazing
with
lady.
All three.
Yeah.
And they were all supportive. They knew that had become my passion.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just, whatever you want to do, son, basically.
Okay.
So
I like that level of support.
Yeah.
It doesn't get much better than that.
No, it was good support.
So knowing the area, obviously being a local, growing up, you knew the community that you were going to serve, the region that you're going to go in. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot of influence here growing up. It's a small town. It's a close-knit community. Was there anything in the community also that drove you and inspired you to say yes and do that?
I don't know if there was something in the community. My eyes were really opened after I became... Mm-hmm. a law enforcement officer down here in Taney County to what problems we might have in Taney County that I didn't see as a civilian. And I really didn't know I was going to be working in Taney County whenever I first signed up.
Yeah.
It's funny how things work out, but I just got tired of driving back and forth and we just had a baby. And so I'm like, I get a phone call. There's an opening at the sheriff's department. Get over there now because the positions fill up quick. And, I applied, had an interview, and was hired, and 4 or 5 days later, I was by myself already. I mean...
Got it on the first try.
I did, yeah.
So, congratulations on that.
Yeah.
See,
it must have been meant to be.
Yeah, and see, you and I have known each other for such a long time, and I'm glad that we finally, you and I, get a chance to sit down, because we've never, even working together, we never really talked about it. And so this is that opportunity to do that. So, again, first try, Taney County... I want to go back to the academy a little bit. What was the biggest challenges of the academy and going through the training that really just, I mean, shaped your acumen and your mettle to be able to serve. What about the academy pushed you the most? What was that like going through that process?
I think learning about how serious and important that job is.
Yeah.
Okay. It's more than a job, actually. It's a career. It's a way of life. You're putting your life on the line day in and day out to protect somebody else.
Absolutely.
They are calling you on their worst day, usually.
Mm-hmm.
They're not calling you to say, hi, hey, how you doing? I just won the lottery. It's someone's just hurt me. They've stolen from me, whatever the case may be. And so you really get to see how messed up the world is or how much evil there is out there.
Absolutely.
And to try to put yourself in the middle of that and become kind of like a sheepdog, right? You have the wolves, you have the sheep, and the sheepdog, like those are here, stands in between good and evil. So I would say that was the big thing. It's just, it was an eye-opening experience, and it was an importance. And they really instilled in us how important the job was.
Well, and Melissa, you have listened to past episodes, mm-hmm. and one of the questions that always comes up in the interview, and Darren, you'll get the same one, it amazes me, and it opens our eyes as community members when I ask this question. So for you, being as young as you were, new family, Julie's in your life, you've got a little one, and you're just getting started in a career that is filled with uncertainty. You clock in, you begin your day, you leave the house, you don't know what the day is going to bring. So that brings me to my question for you. Day one, you're walking out the door, you're saying goodbye to Julie.
Christmas Day.
Yes.
It was Christmas Day. It was scary.
And you're saying goodbye to your baby. How take me inside your head. I mean, how do you get your head right? Leaving and not knowing what the day is going to bring and what the outcome is going to be. It takes a lot.
It does. I mean, and they do a really good job at Springfield to get you ready. It was a 6-month-long academy. It was full-time, even weekends sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of material, over 1,000 hours of training. But I don't think you can ever be 100% ready for your first day.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, absolutely. And you're with a training officer for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas Day, 2017, halfway into the shift, we had a hostage situation. Guy had a knife to his girlfriend. I mean, day one, I'm having to stand behind a tree, take cover for a tree. Why, you know, they call him out of the house. There's a sniper across the street.
Christmas Day.
Yeah, Christmas Day.
Oh,
and
wow.
A lot of your, you learn this later throughout your time in law enforcement, that a lot of your big family disturbances occur around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Those are busy times for law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we just kind of throws you into it. And you just, for a while, it is scary. You don't know if you're coming home or not. And if you watch and you see what's going on. And, of course, social media wasn't big in 2004.
Yeah, because you know, I mean,
so you're
at that
not
point,
seeing everything, but now, gosh, a new guy today.
The Facebook it was really just being born at that point, as far as Zuckerberg is concerned.
Exactly.
And again, I think to help community misconception, they do so much training. It is in depth. It is thorough
and continuing throughout too.
But here's the crazy thing: before you go out on the field in day one, I can imagine that the academy, being as it is, it's great. But they can't train you for every conceivable scenario.
No, they can only do the best they can.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And throughout time, they keep evolving. They keep improving. Continuous improvement, which is a management, you know, technique or philosophy. And they really just try to just do the best they can with new things going on, what they learn about. Evil is getting better, too. Suspects are learning to do things different ways and how
Absolutely.
To hide their drugs or weapons, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And so law enforcement has to evolve, too. It's a daily changing thing. Gosh, there's been so many changes in the 7.5 years I've been out. So many things. People call me up and want to ask me questions, and I'm like, hey, I've been out too long. I can't
give you the most up-to-date information.
I really don't want to. I mean, I do my best, but I don't want to really try to go back there. And what if I give them the wrong information?
Mm, yes.
But I also don't necessarily want to relive all that mm-hmm. stuff either. But it's just different. Things are legal now that weren't legal then, you know, so.
True. State law has changed significantly
sure has.
In 7 years.
Oh, lot.
Melissa, this is the point now where you probably want to, you know, if you've got Kleenex with you, you might need it. And Darren and I know what's coming, and everybody that's listening to this episode for the very first time, you have no idea what is coming. So the decision to go into law enforcement shaped you. Service in law enforcement changed you forever. And that is a very pointed comment and a way for me to phrase that for you, and you know why I did that way. There has been a question that has come up in each segment about the most traumatic situation or day that you had in the field and in your career. And when I talk about trauma and a life-altering event, you, among others, experienced that firsthand in a way that could have been devastating.
Sure.
I would love you to go as far into it as you want. This would be the first time that I've really, I mean, I know bits and pieces. I've not heard the story in its entirety in full, and the community is going to be hearing it for the first time. And it really frames up just how difficult the job can be. So I'd love you to go back if you feel comfortable enough to do so.
I sure will. So really, to paint the picture for you, I have to set the timeline a little bit.
Please do.
It's 2016. We've just went through the 2014, 2015 racial stuff. More law enforcement deaths have occurred than there has been in a long time. If you followed the Officer Down Memorial page, you were seeing numbers of 200, 300 officers killed in a year. And really, if we weren't in a major war, mm-hmm. there was more cops being killed than there were in the military. And so it was definitely eye-opening. The summer of 2016, July or August, we just had the Dallas ambush, where I want to say four or five Dallas officers were killed. Mm-hmm. And it really hits home to a law enforcement officer, more so while you're current than retired, but it makes you mad. There's just so many different emotions, and you realize it could just happen any time. Mm-hmm. So I'm in about my 13th year, 2016, and I believe it was a Thursday night, September 16th, and we weren't that busy. I was a senior officer on. Our corporal was off for one reason or another. I can't remember why. There was about four or five of us, one of which was my friend Kyle Essery. We went to high school together.
Yeah,
big guy. You ever met Kyle? He's a school resource officer now.
Yeah, he's a stout boy.
He is. He's a big guy. Nice to have as your backup.
Oh, you better believe
it. And quicker than he looks. But yeah, good man, and came to work there, started in the jail a few years after I did.
Yeah.
But he was on duty that day. There was, Austin Castro, Hayden Brawley, his dad's the sheriff over in Shannon County now. A couple other guys. I'm drawing a blank on who else was on duty, but Chris Gill, a good friend of mine, he was on duty. And he said, "Hey, do you mind if we're not real busy? Do you mind if I go home?" And I'm like, I don't care. He really didn't need my permission. I'm only senior to him by like 3 months.
Yeah.
But
not too much time between you.
Good guy. We worked a lot of the same hours, and if I got into something or he got into something, usually one of us were helping each other out on it. A lot of different pursuits. He was my backup, my radio man in the pursuit. A lot of fun times. But so he goes home because we're not that busy, and then usually what happens when someone goes off, like when someone goes home, is you get busy. It's just what happens.
Yeah.
Sure, go on home and then call.
Just about anything, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we were being sent in every direction. Kyle and another guy, I think, had to go to a domestic in Kirbyville off like J Highway. Somebody else had to go up north somewhere, and I got sent to check a noise complaint down at Big Bear Resort, which is off P Highway 265. So
you guys got separated.
We were all scattered around, and that's just, once you get busy, that's what happens. Sometimes you're working stuff by yourself that you normally would have somebody with you, but that's just what you do. Mm-hmm. You just take one for the team and roll with it. So I get sent to this noise complaint, and I'm down in Big Bear, and I've been down there many times. I've been working here about 13 years, so I know the area pretty well. And I'll pause there, and I'll back up 2 days.
Yeah.
Okay, September 14th, a Branson officer that I know, and we the Sheriff's Department at the time, I believe they still do, have scanners where you can listen to Branson, Hollister, other, you know, Forsyth, and you can hear what they got going on, right? Mm-hmm. A Branson officer was out with three individuals. He'd got their identification, and then one of the, this guy takes off running. So he chases after the guy, ends up catching him. He had a gun on him. He fights with a guy, gets the gun away, comes back, and the two ladies were gone, but he had their IDs. He ran their IDs. They both had felony warrants, one out of Taney County, one out of Greene County, so he was really in a mess. He was by himself at the time. Mm. They put out this information over the radio, be on the lookout for this Jeep and these two women. Mm-hmm. They left.
Yeah.
They've got felony warrants, and here's this Jeep. And I'm like, well, I arrested this girl like 2 weeks ago, and she was in that Jeep, so I'm familiar with this vehicle. Mm-hmm. So I kind of make it my thing, and guys that work with me a long time, they know what I'm talking about. I would memorize a license plate or memorize this or that and just have a passion for finding it.
Yeah.
And it would be a lot of times you find these things when you're not even looking for it. So I'm going to this noise complaint. I get to the house. There's a couple of raccoons like going through a trash can. That's what it was.
Oh.
No big deal.
Wow.
I leave Big Bear Resort. I'm headed back up the road towards P Highway. So there's some storage units at the bottom, and I'm going up the road. It's kind of a narrow road, and I meet this Jeep. I memorized the license plate, so I knew it immediately. Mm-hmm. I call out to dispatch and say, I have the Jeep right here. I'm going to turn around on it and see if I can locate where it went. And so I turn around. I lose it down in there somewhere, but I've been there enough that I know that it's a one-way-in, one-way-out resort.
So there's not many places
that
could have gone.
That Jeep is there somewhere.
Yep.
It may take a little bit. So I call for another unit. Well, we didn't have anybody, so they sent a trooper. And Daniel Yingling shows up, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and he sits there at the storage units, the entrance exit, right? And
kind
I start...
Like a spotter, a backup
right,
spotter, yeah.
I start going street to street. I'm going to find this Jeep. Kyle Estery gets done with his domestic. He says, hey, there's a house on this road. You might want to check it out. I've heard it's good for narcotic activity. I'm like, okay. And sure enough, he was right. I find the Jeep, parked outside of this trailer home, and there's lights on in the trailer, you know. So I wait till Kyle gets there. We're not in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
We've done this a lot. You know, you don't pull right up into the driveway and honk and say, hey, Sheriff's Department's here. You know, you do it smart. Park down the road. You black out. You want to be the element of surprise. So Trooper Yingling, Kyle Estery, myself, we start to make our approach. Kyle takes the back door, and the trooper and I take the front door of this trailer home. There's a whole lot of debris, and I say trash.
It's like what you see in a movie, yards full of all kinds of stuff.
It's their
yeah.
treasures,
yes.
right?
Uh-huh.
But you're having to navigate around it, and to get to the front door, it was really tricky to try to sneak up on it and not kick a pole or whatever it was and make a lot of noise. But I go to the left, and the trooper goes to the right side of the door, and we listen for a few minutes first before we knock, right? You want to see what's going on inside the home. What are they talking about? How many people were inside? All this kind of stuff. Stuff that I've learned over 13 years of knocking on doors, probably 1,000 in my career. And I hear these two guys and this female talking, and the female's voice was the same female voice I remember hearing a couple weeks prior.
Mm-hmm.
So I then had the vehicle, and I have the female inside with felony warrants. So we're here. We have the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And these two guys are talking about a robbery. And I don't know if they've committed a robbery. I don't know if they're planning a robbery, but there's probably a weapon involved. So the trooper and I, we are what they call low ready. We unholster our weapons, and we have our guns down at our side.
Yeah, yeah.
Just pointed at the ground. Just kind of one step out of the way. And we radio to Kyle, and I think, if I can remember right, we didn't have very good radio signal, though. So I don't know if we were able to tell him about it mm-hmm. at the back door. But we knock and announce, and we're immediately met with FU, and we're not coming out, and go away, and all this. And I'm like, well, we're not going away, and here's why. 1, 2, and 3. I can leave a couple guys here. I can go back to the sheriff's office, and in a couple hours, return with a search warrant.
Yeah.
Or she can peacefully come out of the trailer. We're here for her. We're not here for you. We don't have any reason to go in. We're here to arrest her for her felony warrant. And there's some silence. And then he says a whole different tone. tone of voice, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, okay. It's like he gets polite. And so that was kind of a hair on the back of my neck thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, she's going to come out. The door opens, and she starts to walk out, and then she quickly backs away, and I see her. And there he is with a gun pointed at me. And we're immediately drop the gun, and he fires, we fire. We really didn't know who fired first, but until later we learned. Oh, but 3 or 4 seconds into it, I feel this extreme pain in my right shoulder arm area, and it dawns on me I've been shot. So I walk over to the side and kind of go down to a knee. It's extreme pain. It's like, and I'm my right arm is just flopping around. I can't control it. The nerves are going crazy, and it's really warm feeling, and I'm wet with blood, and you know, I'm starting to get dizzy, and just, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I'm about to die. I'm going to die here, and I don't want to die. I'm 33. I've got 3 kids, and so I start praying, mm-hmm. and we've neutralized the threat. He's down on the ground. They got the gun away from him, but no one's really went inside. There's a lot of screaming going on inside the trailer with whoever's left. And Kyle comes up and, Trooper Yingling, and they're cutting off my uniform and trying to get the radio to work. And it's gotten a lot better. But back then, I think there were still parts of the county, even in 2016.
Like blackout communication situation. Yeah, yeah.
Not good service.
And he's having to run to his car to use his car radio just to get, hey, officer down. All this, and I'm just praying, you know, save me, and I don't want this guy to die either, and, you know, we're not, and I'm crying, and I'm like, I don't, you know, we didn't want this to happen, and couldn't believe it had, even though it, we see it every day across the United States. Mm-hmm. Man, it's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
This is Taney County. This is Branson. Cops don't get shot here. About 20 minutes till the ambulance gets there, and I'm still a little aggravated about this. You know, you think if you get shot in the line of duty, you get to fly in a helicopter, but it was really foggy on my night, so I didn't get to. So anybody out there that wants to give me a helicopter ride, I would still take you up on that. Someone offered it to me a long time ago, and I never got back with them, and I don't know.
Chopper tours of the Ozarks.
Right.
That what you just described is the scenario that anybody that is in law enforcement goes to the academy for, trains for.
Yeah.
But yet, every day they leave, they hope they never encounter it.
Sure. You never think you're going to.
You don't go out looking for it.
I mean, the odds are still good that it won't happen. You know what happens more in this profession than anything else, yeah. right? You're more yeah. likely to get shot as a police officer than you are doing lots of other things. Right. But the ambulance crew that got there, 3 really good men that I still see every once in a while.
How long were you waiting for medical attention?
15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
I mean, it's down there. It's down south a ways. And we have really good coverage. We do. We have 20. Around 20 ambulances, right?
Yeah.
There's some counties, they have one. McDonald County has one ambulance. I learned this because I'm doing some training with an organization down there, another nonprofit mm-hmm. in the area. And We're talking about, you know, emergency response and what to do and what not to do. And they're like, one ambulance. We're blessed here to have Daryl Koontz and his staff over at TCA.
Well, and I think about TCA, you know, my sister, you know, Kim Beard is the office manager out there for TCAD. Boy, 20 minutes, Darren, 20 minutes of prayer, uncertainty, fear, because you're human.
Yeah.
I'm thinking...
Later on, I look back and I go, if I'm by myself at this place, and I got shot back in here, I wouldn't have been able to, there's no way I could have stopped that bleeding. So they cut off my uniform, they cut off my vest, it misses the vest just a little bit, and it's you know, inches, and I'm still possibly working, right? Still maybe out there today.
Yes, your whole life. A few inches.
Yeah.
And everything, this whole conversation's
different. Or a few inches higher in my neck, I'm probably not here at all, you know? It's just, you never know. And so those guys did a really good job of stopping the bleeding. I give Kyle a hard time. You talked about how strong he is. The bruising, I have pictures of the bruising that I had on my body from his pressure, right?
Stopping the blood.
He stopped the bleeding. I had, when I get to the Cox South is where they took me, I spent about a week there, 10 days, something like that, for the first time. And I had to have two blood transfusions. I lost a lot of blood. They did a fixation surgery where basically they reattached my right arm to my shoulder because it kind of went in and separated the humerus from the scapula.
So it did go through bone.
Oh, yeah. Lots of bone. I still have fragments and stuff. They got the big chunk out, and I want to say it's on display at a restaurant in town. But a lot of it's still in there because it was too – they didn't want to go picking around my organs for it.
Of course.
So
of course.
Leave it alone. Sure. There's the chance it might come to the surface and eventually come out, but not yet.
All those transfusions, and you said one visit – how many visits in total since the time the incident happened to where you're at right now? How much time have you been in the hospital, in and out of the hospital?
Around a month. First time was the longest. Well, the second surgery, I go in a year later, the bone never really healed right. There was about a section of about 4 inches
mm-hmm.
for those that can't see us because we're on the radio here. I'm holding up two fingers.
He is.
Thinking, hey.
It's big.
But so what they decide to do is a bone graft surgery, and they go in and they cut out some of my hip bone on my right side, and they put it up here to try to, like, fill the hole. And it is a better for my range of motion, mm-hmm. but it's still kind of messed up. I have about 50% use of my right arm. And I use it. I do. I try to use it the best I can because I don't want to just, you know, limp it around. Mm-hmm. But that surgery was supposed to be a go in and go home same day. I don't know if there's an issue with anesthesia because both times I had problems and I ended up staying almost a week again. The worst part of all that is, in my opinion, I hate catheters. I don't know if you've had any, Josh.
I have.
When you were just in. I don't know.
Yeah, I have.
I hate those things.
Mm-hmm. When
they're not a good time.
I had something like that when I had like a gallbladder surgery or something. I've had them in there.
Yeah, I've had somewhere around 7 or 8 of them.
They're not pleasant.
Oh, yeah. And about a month total. There was a couple times where after the fact and during physical therapy, I had 18 months of physical therapy and Mercy physical therapy. They are amazing. Kim Hale, her staff over there, Judy Holloman, Katie Emily. I was there a long time, so I know a lot of the names. They just did a bang-up job, and they're great. They now have the new facility. I was over at the old one. I never got to go into the new fancy. I go now for my primary care doctor, but no, I'm in there a long time. But through that, there would be times where I would overdo it, and it would swell, and lots of pain would be there, and I'd have to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, drain this thing.
What's going on, you know?
It'd swell up, and I'd be like, there was one night it was so bad, the pain was so bad sitting at home, that I wasn't thinking right. I'm like, Julie, go get my gun and end this. I mean, I've taken every pain pill I possibly can, and it's not touching the pain until they got there and put fentanyl in me.
Do you recall some of the conversation or the first words that Julie said to you when she was notified when this all went down?
So that process, I have to, there's a deputy now. She's a detective,
mm-hmm.
Viviana Giraldo. You know her?
I don't know the name now.
Awesome female officer. She's a Forsyth officer at the time because we live in Forsyth. She knocks on the door, and it's 2 a.m, so...
Oh, Lord. Oh.
My wife is like...
She's instantly thinking...
Yeah, right? I mean, why else is someone knocking on my door? Right. And then she opens it. But Viviana did an amazing job, and she said the first words out of her mouth were, he's okay. Instead of he's been shot or he's going to the hospital, you know.
She said the perfect thing.
She did the perfect thing, and she probably gets tired of me saying it, because I still see her, and the first thing I say is, you're awesome, the way you handled this, you know, like a broken record, but she could have done it so many other ways,
mm-hmm.
but she did the best thing, and it's like she's never done that before, because this just doesn't happen here. That's right. The first guy since, like, want to say 1927 or something.
God, well, and the crazy thing is, I mean, you see this stuff in movies, Melissa. I mean, this situation with her going to your house and telling Julie, you know what it reminds me of, and you're going to know this when I say this, it reminds me of the telegram process that were coming in We Were Soldiers. Do you remember the movie?
Yes.
And remember the wives were going door to door and said, you don't do this alone. And can you imagine, this is one situation. But that, I mean, my word.
Yeah,
I mean,
so the first time, to answer your question, I'm in the ambulance and I'm pretty loopy, but I start making phone calls, you know, because, you know, word's getting out.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell, so what I actually did first was I called my father-in-law. And he's passed away now, but I called him and talked to him, and he called her first to explain to her everything. I mean, I'm pretty doped up. I'm starting to feel better at this time, back in the ambulance. And, you know, the funny thing is I never lose consciousness of the whole thing. To go back to the scene for you, there's a lot of, you know, some people have heard bits and pieces of this, but they haven't heard some of the other stuff. We'd never been to this house. We didn't know what was going on in this house. But as I lay there, God kept me alert because there was still this other guy in there, and there's other people. First of all, we had the female with the felony warrants. Mm-hmm. So when two other units arrive, I say, hey, there's another guy in there somewhere. He never came out the back door. They go in, they arrest the female, but they don't come out with a guy. I'm like, you got to go back in. These guys are pretty new at the time. I think 1 or 2 year officers.
Did he go through a trap door on the floor?
They go back in, and the best thing I remember hearing is, show me your hands, because I knew they found him. He was hiding under a mattress with a handgun with him, within reach.
Lord.
He was the guy that Branson had chased and fought with two nights prior and put in jail. Mm-hmm. But he was already out. And that's another frustration that law enforcement has, is you put somebody away and then
sure enough, they become an offender.
They may even get 15 years in DOC, but 2 years later, they're back on the street doing the same thing. It's the same people over and over again.
Gosh. And I can't even, I mean, and I'm glad you made that point, because it does kind of remind me. It's like, you know, you have repeat offenders, or you have somebody that gets out. What's staggering to me in my mind, and it was a certain way when you were actively serving, and now since you've been retired, and we're not getting any smaller.
No.
What baffles me is, how do you track the scope of repeat offenders or somebody that is a risk? I just don't know. It's like, you know, do you check up on these people? I mean, my mind can't really fathom, like, how do you, we have lawbreakers, we have violent criminals, we have repeat offenders. How do you track them all? How do you keep an eye out?
Do you get notifications?
Yeah, so... Not really. I mean, when someone gets out of prison, they don't necessarily say, hey, gather around everybody, so-and-so is back on the loose. But if an officer does his due diligence and goes in and checks things pays attention to the warrants that are coming down. And what I would do is, we lived close enough that I would check on 20 minutes early before I would get sent to something. And I'd go to the office and I'd look through the stack of papers that have not been entered into the system, that you wouldn't necessarily know if you pulled somebody over and for a tail light and you run their license.
Of course.
But I would go through and I would say, oh, so-and-so's got a warrant. So-and-so's got a warrant. And I would be driving down the strip and there they were walking. Hey, I'm out with so-and-so. I just passed and they're walking by Taco Bell. They got a warrant. And everybody would go, how do you know that? Well, I went in and checked ahead of time. And that's just something I did because I lived close and it was, you know, I would just check stuff. So there's that opportunity there. But, and I got to say that some of these people do rehabilitate. There's some really good stories out there. There's a lady in our community, Al Vineyard. You might know Al.
The name is familiar to me.
What she's accomplished since her narcotic lifestyle, I guess is the right way to put it. She is a voice for healing and restoration, and she's out and she's just doing amazing things, and I'm very proud of her, and so many people are.
Well, and you probably... And what's good about this, and it seems like it's gotten so much better over the years, I think about Carrie McKee, I think about CORE, I think about our groups at Elevate Branson.
Yeah.
I've been to CORE, and I have talked to addicts out there that are in the process, some that have fully recovered, and that's a good point that you make.
Mm-hmm.
We don't often see it. Sometimes we may see somebody that is homeless out in the community, or we see somebody... And I don't know what it is, but we go to our most negative instincts sometimes as community members. We see it, we put a face to it, and we immediately think it's bad.
Right.
No, I mean, there's a human being there.
Yeah, and the Lord cares about them is the same as He does us. And, you know, it is an uphill battle. It really is. For all the nonprofits out there, and thankfully we have so many good ones.
Yeah.
It's an uphill battle, but we got to keep trying. Whatever the scope is of your nonprofit, you just got to keep digging at it and digging at it. And that's why I've aligned myself with some good people, some good nonprofits. Taney County 100 Club, I serve on the board there. We've been in and talked to you guys before. And
you know, that's great. And I'm glad you brought up the Taney County 100 Club because, Melissa, you go and see movies regularly. I know you do, and so do I. Always when I see a film on the IMAX or I see a film anywhere in town,
yeah,
my eyes go straight to you in the 100 Club ad that is in the film reels over at the IMAX. And I would just love your thoughts on that because there are two words that stick out in that ad. Stand up, support us.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you personally after you have served and nearly given your life? But you talk about, you know, being in retirement and you're busier now than you ever have been. I know your work did not stop after that incident. So what does that mean when you say stand up and support? What does that mean to you personally?
I'm climbing my second mountain, Josh. Like, my first one was my career in law enforcement.
Yeah, exactly.
And instead of staying out at the bottom because I feel like I go down rabbit holes when I answer you, and I apologize for that.
No, it's fine.
There were times afterwards that I was sitting on the couch, and everything that I'd witnessed leading up to, they don't really tell you how to handle this stuff, right? Isaac hit it really well when he was in here. Isaac Johnson, he was talking about it. You don't have time to decompress and to debrief from something you just witnessed.
Absolutely.
You get back in the car, and you go to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're retired and you're sitting on the couch, everything just comes back to the forefront. Not once, not twice, but three times, I witnessed men hanging from their own garage doors, right? But you just move on to the next thing until you're sitting on the couch however long later, right?
Yeah.
So I'm down in the dumps. It's like 2018, and I am close to killing myself. I don't tell a lot of people this, but it's part of the story. I had the gun right there with me on the couch. I'm crying. I thankfully pick up the phone and call the psychiatrist. They get me in. I didn't have any visits approved at that time, so I had to like beg for me to get in, but they got it approved and I get in. But
did you go in
fast
on
forward?
Did you go in on a 5150?
I didn't. I didn't have to do that. I did have someone, a friend of mine, come and take all my weapons for a while, just to get it out of the house. But
can I just say I respect you for being transparent and talking about that? That's a very dark place in your life.
It is, and a lot of men and women go through it.
And here's the reason why I respect you. I've not talked about it publicly on the air on the radio station, but I'm going to do it here on the podcast because I feel like this will be kind of more of a bonding thing for you and I. I respect it because when I was 20, I went in on a 5150 myself at Burrell Behavioral Health, but it's because I was a victim of abuse in my first marriage.
Gotcha.
And I didn't see a way out, and I thought the only way to get out of the situation of the abuse was to end my life.
Sure.
And the only good thing that my abuser did was call my parents. They got there in time to stop me. So I respect that immensely. That is one of the darkest, that is the darkest place you could ever go to in your life.
Yeah.
Good on you for making the call.
So thankfully I've got that experience that I rose above it, right? I've learned some good healing practices and some ways to, if I start to feel down or whatever, I have a good three or four people I can give a phone call to. But
yep.
Remind me of the question again, because like I said, I go down rabbit holes.
You know, thinking about that ad, about the words, stand up, support us. What does that mean to you personally now after all this time and right now in 2023?
So the 100 Club, we have, with all the support we've got of the community, thankfully, we are set up to where if something seriously happens again, if we have a catastrophic injury to the point of like debilitating wheelchair or worse, a death, you never want it to happen, but we're set up to where we'll be able to take care of that family because of the support of the community. So, but we still need it. Like, we just grow this fund. So if people want to support us, it's $100 a year, $9 a month, and 100% of that, we're all volunteer. None of us are paid. It was founded and started by Corey Roebuck. And basically, in 2014, he went through a life-changing experience, too. He's a water rescue fireman. He still is an active fireman. He was trying to save some people through one of our many floods we have in here in Taney County, down in Turkey Creek. Mm-hmm. And he gets swept away, and he's laying in the water, like, trying to get rescued, thinking, what would happen if I passed away? Who's going to do what's going to happen for my family? you know, who's going to take care of them financially?
Sure.
So he'd heard about this and said, I'm just going to start it up. So in 2020, right around the beginning, him and another gentleman, J.B. Henderson, who called me a little bit ago, I'm meeting him for coffee later.
Right on.
He's the vice chairman. He's a retired Phoenix, Arizona police officer. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, would you like to be a part of this? And I said, absolutely. My passion has been, since I got out, to just try to support first responders and our military. And so that's why I've aligned myself with Sheepdog Impact Assistance out of Northwest Arkansas. They're a national organization headquartered there in Northwest Arkansas. Canines for Camo, who gave me Dozer. I try to get back to them a little bit. We walked in the Christmas parade here recently, and they would love anybody's support, because what they do is they train really well these dogs for combat vets and first responders that need them. And he's been great for me.
That's
I would say
boy.
The
beautiful
nightmares
boy.
Have decreased by like half having him.
Yeah.
But and then there's Sheepdog, Canines for Camo, the Taney County 100 Club. I've been with them the longest. But my family in August decided we wanted to start a scholarship fund, because my oldest daughter, who's now a freshman at Missouri State, she was looking for scholarships,
sure,
applying for this or that, and she got a lot, but she couldn't find a lot of local first responder related, like kids of first responders. There was one nationally that she was able to get because of my injury. But we just said, let's just do it. Let's just start our own. It can't be that hard. Right? I mean, it's challenging. It's a little tricky to apply through the IRS.
Of course.
And you pay that fee, and you're like, well, here, roll the dice and see if you're going to get it. But really, Corey Roebuck and the other good people that I'm with the 100 Club, they have given me experience. I've been around the nonprofit enough now that where I felt comfortable enough. And to also give myself a good board, too. I got Brad Daniels. Corey Roebuck's helping me out on this project, too. Sheriff Daniels is a great friend, big mm-hmm. supporter of me. Nobody, maybe besides my mother or my family, was at my house more than Brad Daniels when I was hurt, talking with
That's
me,
really awesome.
Bringing me lunch. There was a time period where I didn't drive. I walked with a cane or a walker for months and didn't go anywhere. And there was a pretty dark time there, right? I mean, I'm just sitting there dwelling on things. But he would come visit with me among some other people. But
You had those.
I have those
reminders.
Good people,
yeah.
And so we've added those same types of people to our board as we're trying to raise funds for this scholarship that we're going to be giving out for our very first time this May. And so we're excited about that, and I'd like to share, maybe if we have time later on,
please,
about how they can get connected with that. But yeah, we really appreciate that message that the IMAX and Branson Meadows Cinemas has there. It's just as a advertising for us and to try to get more followers and supporters of it. And 100 means $100 a year, but it also means that when it was very first started back in the 1950s, a Detroit police officer was killed in the line of duty. A Pontiac dealer, maybe the Pontiac dealer, I think it may have been William Pontiac, sent out 100 letters to people he knew. Said, this man just died. He has a wife who's a widow with a young child, and they need help. Please give. Everybody gave something. They raised several thousand dollars in 1952.
That's a lot of money.
The very next year, Houston, Texas had a similar incident. I bet they'd heard of this story, so they create the very first 100 Club based on that premise of 100 people giving. And so we have chapters all over the U.S. We have Greene County 100 Club, who, when we first started, they came down and helped us get going. Then Christian County started after us. Stone County started after us. So it's really growing.
Yeah.
So each county can be kind of like a free insurance policy for these first responders, which we have around 500 in Taney County, fire, police, EMS. And we just basically try to build the fund up, support these guys and gals as much as we can, and be ready for that day. We hope that never happens.
Right.
We don't want it to happen, but if it does, we'll be able to give back, so...
Folks, you've been listening to our most recent edition of the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. It is powered and presented by Arvest Bank. Your host, Josh Grisham and Melissa Box, and our special guest and our feature, Darren Carter. And I will just say, through 45 minutes of this conversation, if you've not been moved, if you've not been reduced to tears, inspired, we're not hitting all the right emotions, but we've hit all of them here in this particular episode. You know, we talk about why people run into danger, why people serve in the fields that they do, why they face incredible challenges. My friend, you have defined all of that. And when I think about your heart, Darren Carter's heart of a hero, and you are, it is not just because you said yes at such a young age and went through the academy and served in the Taney County Sheriff's Office and put your life on the line. You said goodbye to your wife and your kids. That event could have ended your life. But this community is richer for the fact that it altered your life. And when I say heart of a hero, when I look at you, the way I would define that is you have the heart of a hero because your work never stopped. It altered you. It changed you. It made you better in your retirement because you decided that your work was not done. You stayed connected to your community. You continued to push forward. And God love you, you became an advocate. And you're still an advocate to this day. So when I look at you and I think about the heart of a hero, that's what defines it for me in this conversation.
I appreciate that, Josh. You know, I've learned through working with some of these nonprofits, a man named Viktor Frankl, Holocaust survivor,
yeah,
he coined the term that everything can be taken from a man except one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. He went on to write a award-winning book, Man's Search for Meaning, and I think it was a bestseller in multiple countries. But basically, we all go through things, really bad things in life. You know, everybody's story is different. Whether they're a first responder, the military, or just a civilian, doesn't matter. But we all get to choose how we handle that and what we do with it. And there for a while, I wasn't handling it right, but I appreciate the opportunities I've had to go on with this new purpose. And I'm feeling really good. I'm really liking what I'm doing, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be here today to share all this with you guys.
And I'm going to turn it over to Melissa if she's got any final thoughts here in just a little bit, because, I mean, she's been waiting patiently, and I know there's got to be things going through her mind. I want to tie in the Hunter Club, and we'll get to that in just a second. Where you're at right now, and I talked about advocacy, right? I'm curious. There's going to be other officers on the police side, and the sheriff's office are going to be listening to this, first responders, fire, EMS, that are going to catch this episode. It's going to be a big one, and I encourage everybody, thank you for listening to this whenever you're playing it back. When it comes to PTSD and trauma and the ability to process it and deal with it and move forward, your fellow workers that are out in the field that are actively serving or maybe retired that are still struggling privately or silently, what would you most want to say to them if they're listening to this episode to encourage them to pick up the phone, to start that process of healing? What would you most want to say to them to inspire them to make that change or to get help?
Yeah, this is so important, Josh. There's so many current or retired that have it and don't know that they have it.
Yeah.
Right, or they may know, they don't want to say anything because there's a stigma out there that, wow, if I say something, they could take me off the streets or whatever. Yeah. You've got to get some help if you have problems. Talk to somebody. Find some good people that you can count on and trust to share information with, right? You got to pick the right people. You don't want to pick somebody that's doing something that they shouldn't be doing or, you know, bad influence. You want to make sure you align yourself with some good people. But there's so many good organizations out there. Sheepdog Impact Assistance is huge for post-traumatic stress. In fact, I don't say that Dozer's my PTSD dog. I call him my post-traumatic growth dog, right?
I love growth. I love
that.
Yeah,
so I went through Warrior Path through Sheepdog Impact Assistance, and it's progressive alternative training for healing heroes. And it's like your second mountain. It's getting off the couch, because the longer you sit on the couch and just think of stuff and dwell on stuff, it just gets worse. So go out and do something positive with it. Like I said earlier, you have the choice to choose what attitude you're going to have, but don't wait till it's too late and you're really down in the dumps and you might make a bad decision, right? I mean, call somebody, get connected with some good stuff. There's so many good things you get connected with out here in Taney County. I think we have more nonprofits in this area than anywhere else in the country, somebody told me. So there's a lot of good causes out there.
How can we, as community members, talk about stand up, talk about support, You know, I've been an advocate just through interviews with our chief of police, also our sheriff's office, just about getting taxes passed, making sure our officers get support and we're not dealing with broken down vehicles or not having a lack of gear in that situation. When it comes to the 100 Club, how can we be good community stewards, show our support, contribute, and we have that opportunity to make sure that no officer or their family is ever abandoned? How can we contribute?
Yeah, first off, I want to say I think that we're probably better off in this area of the country than anywhere else. The support the last few years has been amazing. We're so thankful. But yeah, we could still use it. I mean, there's always going to be someone out there that could probably be listening to this and go, you know, I'm not really connected with this or that. And we could afford to give $9 a month or $100 a year to be a member of the 100 Club or for our scholarship fund. We'll take any donation, man. We're brand new.
Yeah.
We have a goal of two $500 scholarships this May, but if we can get more than that, we want to give out more. Like next year, maybe we do three scholarships or four scholarships. Maybe we're doing $1,000. Right. College isn't getting any cheaper.
No.
And what
we've made
available too is we decided, like I said, we put some good people on our board. Dana Allmiller, Ron Gross, as well as Cora Roebuck and Sheriff Daniels. We got Susie Henderson. My wife Julie is the secretary. They said, well, what about trade schools? What about if a first responder wants to use the money for either a police academy, fire academy, or EMT school? And I'm like, good point, because that's like $5,000 to $7,000 to go to one of those classes, and not everybody's going to be able to get it paid for. I was very fortunate. Springfield PD paid for it and paid me. But a lot of the academies, they're not that way. So we said, well, let's open it up to that too. So they can apply for trade school and college. It's open not just to first responders' children, but we have a problem with getting the younger generation of wanting to be police, fire, and EMS. There's just less people interested in those jobs. So we said, let's open it up to any high school senior in Taney County that has a desire to go into those career fields too. They don't have to have a parent that was a first responder. They might want to be a first responder. Let's help them out by giving them this opportunity to apply for the scholarship. So any donations for that would help too. We have a year-end giving campaign on Facebook right now. If you've got to be a follower, I think, to see it. But you can go on and click a link and donate $5 if you want. But that's the financial side of things. But just be uplifting, be encouraging. There's a lot of good first responders out there, but they're not perfect. They will make mistakes. So try to be patient with them. Like I said, they're seeing everybody usually on their worst day, and it can get them down. I mean, I made mistakes. There was times I would say the wrong thing sometimes and have to go back and say, hey, I apologize, I didn't handle that right, because we are human.
Yeah.
But it's just trying to get better every day, you know, and do something different from what you learned from your previous experiences. But same goes for the civilians. But, yeah, so just being encouraging. Plug in to something. There's a lot of good causes out there.
Stay connected.
You guys at this radio station do an awesome job of sharing these throughout the, you know, your Christmas campaign, giving, I'm not sure what it's called, but
Season of Caring.
Yeah, you give presents and gifts to families that wouldn't nevertheless be able to do that for their families. And so you really do a good job here of sharing the different causes that you have in Taney County. And I'd say you're blessed to have all those different options. I know Scott McCauley is going to have us talk about the scholarship fund sometime down the road. So
right on.
The station, you know, everybody's been great to us, and I really enjoyed my time doing some broadcasting for Forsyth Sports, but my passion is this. My passion is supporting first responders in our military. So
we're a richer community for it.
I appreciate that.
Melissa Box, if you've got any parting words, any final questions, I would love you to have the final word here on this debut episode for you and for Darren.
Yes, I'm. Like I said, it's a very eye-opening, heroic story, and my hat's off to you. I am glad that our paths crossed, because I'm actually just took over as the Stone County 100 Club president.
Okay. So, oh, wow.
Awesome.
So now that's a neat link. You can give me some pointers.
Yeah,
and I
sure
would love that. And really, you embrace everything that I try to live by, and that's do everything with heart.
Thank
be
you.
Humble and always be hungry. And really, I appreciate even you telling your story. So
thank you, appreciate it. It was a great opportunity to come in here and share the story, because like I said earlier, you never know what impact you're going to have on somebody, and you just hope that you say the right thing and you push somebody just to go out and do their thing, you know. Because there's a story with John Wayne, how he gets saved, like, right before he dies by this little girl in a restaurant. And she has no idea that that's she's going to save John Wayne's life, right? So just get out there and make a difference.
I tell you what, those are great, great words to end what has been an epic episode. I knew it was going to be. This was an easy yes for me to have Darren Carter on this episode. To Julie and to the family, thank you for keeping this man healthy and good and walking with him through this journey and providing him your own inspiration, because Darren is a gift not only to us, but he's a gift to the community and everybody out there that receives support, not only from through the 100 Club, but even if it's just sitting down with Darren and having a conversation and letting his story lift you up and rebuild you, give you strength and courage to move forward. That is a very, very big deal. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. It is found on BransonPodcastNetwork.com, powered and presented by Arvest Bank. We take the time to share our heroes' stories. If you're a hero and you're out there, we will find you too. Our family members and community members, you can help in that search. If you know somebody that is deserving of a nomination and to have their story told, we are ready. Go to the Podcast Network website, BransonPodcastNetwork.com, or any Arvest branch bank location to nominate an emergency worker. And we cannot wait to tell that story next. You are listening to the Branson Podcast Network.